Create more, consume less. This is what we spoke about with digital marketer and musical composer Michael Bellmann from Berlin, who left his kind of perfect milk and honey corporate job 7 years ago. Noticeably not being happy, Michael finally resigned with savings of about 10,000 euro and no clear idea about his professional future. We really enjoyed this interview where we speak and laugh about how dating platforms can help to find a new job and how to find that balance between marketing and music. Hope you enjoy this episode and please subscribe to our podcast.
Welcome to the Brave Transition Podcast. Your hosts are Peggy Titmarsh and Cindy Hurley-Leister.
So welcome everyone. Today, Peggy and I are thrilled to have Michael or Michael Bellmann with us. Michael is the principal online marketing manager at the online network Stay Friends, and he also composes music and runs the neoclassical electro chill music brand Fred Van Bell. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks a lot. Happy to be here.
Great. And hi, Peggy, as always.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Michael, do you want to add anything to the intro that we gave?
No, that's actually currently what I'm doing. I'm also composing music for the theater, but because of Corona, of course, this has gone a bit like in the background. But this, under my regular name, like Michael Bellmann, I produce that music for theater, many musicals and so on. And I try to split these two brands. That's just an addition.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, so music in your life, that's always good. let's dive right in. We always start with our most important question, right? Which is, what was your bravest transition?
My bravest transition. It's funny that because you were like part of that too when that happened, because I guess we can tell that we all spent some time at the same company, which was a quite a large company and a very international company, and it was really like land of milk and honey. You earned really like decent or very good money.
We all miss the money. That's always a topic. So
it's so much easier, actually, right?
I have to say I don't miss it, but I come back to that later.
Okay.
But I vanished from that company actually, and I escaped from that company, and so many people were shocked and were like, "What? Why are you giving up this really like amazing job and this safe job, stability, and so on?" But yeah, I did that after 7 years at that company. I quit and took a year off and I lived in Mannheim then, and I moved to Berlin and did a year of like discovering myself, I think, but like discovering so many other things, talking to so many people, discovering music again for me, working in music. That's why I went from that company, or like what I did afterwards. And I totally quit. So I didn't like, did a pause or something like that, but I totally quit and said, I'm going to be off in 6 months.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously we knew that you left the company, right? That's kind of our similarity. But Peggy and I just spoke before recording this episode that we had really no clue that you just quit, right? You put in your resignation and tell us a little bit more about that time. Like, what were you doing? Like, what did you leave and what kind of plans did you have?
I'm going to tell about the steps, how I came to that decision maybe later, but I was working in an international job in global procurement, and I was responsible to like make sure that the raw materials of a certain business area or business unit were safely procured and everything was stable. And when there was some problem, that somebody took care of that. So I traveled a lot to Great Britain and to Singapore and to the States. And it was, I learned that there was quite a lot of stress in procurement because everybody notices when the raw materials are not there. So that was quite a stressful job. I mean, if some like sale doesn't come through or if you're not selling enough, you can always like explain it. But if there is a raw material that's not there, then you have really a big problem. It goes up to the board and they're quickly like asking what's happening. But that was my position. I traveled a lot. I earned decent money. I had a very nice boss, I have to say, and very nice colleagues. And I think the people were totally not the problem when I left. The reason was rather the company structure. And maybe I should talk about the steps, how I came there.
Please.
After 5 years at the company, I thought something was wrong with me, I thought. And I noticed it. I wanted to go on holiday with my then boyfriend. And I tried to like pack my suitcase and I had to work in the office for quite a long time on that day and just rush back home and wanted to pack my suitcase, but I couldn't like close it. And I sat on the bed and started crying. And I was like, what's going on? Nothing is going right in my life and I can't even like pack my suitcase. And I wanted to leave like the other night, so the night after that. And went back to the office the next day, worked there, traveled to Freiburg where my boyfriend lived then, and worked on the train, worked there and closed my notebook at midnight. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, we had to go to the airport and was totally exhausted. And I sat there, it was Gran Canaria, and I sat there, it was perfect weather, perfect sun. And I sat next to the pool for a week, didn't read anything. I brought 5 books, didn't read anything. It was just wrapped in a blanket at 30 degrees Celsius and looked like dumbly on the pool. And I thought, something is really going wrong here. And there were other like things too, because a former boss of mine or a boss's boss, who was taking care of people a lot. He told me when he saw me in presentations or in meetings that I should give more personality into like my job. And I was really scared because I was like, how? And
what does that mean? Kind of, yeah.
yeah. And what kind of personality? I thought it's me working. And I was totally irritated by that and didn't know how to do that. And the other thing was that I met my mom once and she told me, she doesn't really recognize me anymore. I'm telling her about my job and about everything, but I was a rather happy child and like until the middle of the 20s, rather happy and optimistic. And she didn't see that happiness anymore. Mm. And that really made me totally like cry on the inside. I was really irritated by all those things. And another point was that I had just a cough, but I just went to the office and didn't really like take care of it. And afterwards, it was like a permanent cough and I had to get antibiotics to get rid of that. But I just thought I'm so important or so things don't go without me and I have to prepare that presentation and this is demanded of me and I have to like fulfill that role and fulfill that job. And I didn't really take care of my health or of me. And I also heard about another colleague who came from McKinsey to like settle down and to do less work, but she did almost like the same amount of work. And then she had like a wound at her foot and that got inflamed, but she just took some painkillers and she just went to the doctor when the painkillers were not like enough anymore. And then the doctor almost had to, amputate or like cut off her foot. And I was like, this totally shocked me. And I had the feeling that on a very much lower level, I was on the same road. So these were all like things that I started to notice. When I started to notice, well, something is really wrong here and I have to do something.
Oh, can relate to that story a lot. I mean, you know, we worked at the same company, and a lot of people, you know, some people may feel that same. But I was just wondering, so how did you then get the courage to say, actually, this is enough? Because a lot of people know that actually it's enough, it's not healthy, it's not sustainable, and all that sort of thing. But how to then actually pull the trigger, right? How did you do it?
Well, it was a multi-step thing, I think. So first, I tried to change my job, because before, like when all that happened, I was in operation and marketing. And I thought, well, that's maybe driving me crazy. And then I tried to change my job within the company. I went to that international job, but my boss was quite far away. So I thought I got more freedom and so on. But that really didn't change a thing. So I tried to work part-time. And I just told my boss, I want to work for 80%. And he was so irritated. He was very career oriented. And he couldn't totally understand it, because I was like on a track to also like gain my first leadership experience and so on. And he was like, well, to talk to my boss. So I talked to my boss's boss, and he was also like, oh, what's going on? And so on. I was just like, I just want to take a day off per week. That's not too strange. But he was like, you're closing so many doors. And they were like, they were not threatening, I think, but they were like trying to explain to me what they see, what might happen to me. And they were rather like scared for me. And was like, well, if I close this and this door, maybe then it's not the right thing for me. If I just like work for 4 days per week, this shouldn't be like the end of everything if I just like stop working for 1 day per week. And then it went back and forth, and it took like 2 to 3 months, and I had to explain that to so many people, head of HR and so on. Was like, what's going on?
I was
going to
say, I can imagine HR asking a lot of questions, because usually it's only like the moms, right, who want to work part-time. Yeah.
And people were, I was really like, I didn't really have to decide that much on that, because I was like, I want to do that. But people were so like, I have to understand that and so on. And it took like 2 or 3 months. And I thought, well, if that is really a big problem, and then I shouldn't maybe like work at that company anymore. And like, I quit the day before they approved my 80%.
Wow.
But I was like, I felt it's time now, because one thing was I had like 6 months notice by the end of the quarter. So if I hadn't like quit at that point of time, I would have worked like for 9 months at that company additionally. And my relationship was also breaking up. So, which was really sad, but it also freed me a bit. And I thought, now I really have like, I don't know, a blank canvas again. And I can paint again on that canvas. So many things like broke then, and some like, I until that point, I gathered so much stuff like credibility at my job, relationship wise, I gathered so much furniture and stuff at my apartment. And by quitting and moving, and then like, it felt like getting rid of all this stuff, which was in a way sad. Also, like leaving the company was really like sad for me, because I loved working there. I didn't love the pressure that was there and what that company made with me, but I loved the people and working there. And then I quit and my relationship broke up. And I actually thought I should apply for another company. And I applied for some companies and had some talks, but I thought, well, they are also like, they're the same, rather. The grass is not greener there. And then I decided to do a sabbatical for a year and move to a different city. I already had some friends living in Berlin, so that was a good thing to move there.
Yeah. Wow. And thanks for taking us really through those steps, right? I can tell, like, I mean, your corporate, you know, background, that it's really, yeah, and also the timeline, right? You said like really getting from the land of, what did you say, the honey and milk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, where you think, hey, hold on, why am I not coping, right? Why is this so stressful, right? And then suddenly realizing what is in your control and what you can do about this. And trying, first trying like, you know, the part-time solution and or different jobs. And it's really, and also relying on your support system, right? Because suddenly like other, like people that care about you notice, hold on, what is going on, right? Why are you, you're usually not like that stressed and a happy person, like what happened? So these are all signs along the way. And one question around like then, putting in the resignation, and I imagine for all the like non-German listeners, right, those like long periods of, yeah, you have a 6 or 9 months resignation, I mean that speaks for the company culture, which I mean has its good ways, right? Because most of the people there want to stay at that company until retirement, so 5 or 6 or 7 years is not long. And then having a 6 or 9 months, you know, resignation period is actually quite good. But for you, it was maybe the last, was that the last, like, was that the last kind of, you know, what thing that helped you to pull the trigger?
Well, handing in the resignation, you mean?
Yeah, like well, really making this decision. Yeah.
This was like, I have to do this because I can't. It's a little bit like, I always tell friends, like, when they're in a problem, like this thing, love it, change it, leave it. And if you can't like love it, or if it's toxic for you and you maybe have to change it, and if you can't change it, leave it. I tried to change the environment, and I tried to change like my position there, but I couldn't. The pressure was too strong, so I had to leave it. It was like like toxic, and it would have been toxic again. To me, it was the only option, but people were shocked actually. Like I first had to explain why I wanted to do part-time, and then I had to do the rounds again in the hierarchy to explain why I quit. And I think maybe because some other people quit and they went to work for different companies. So they were like, released from their contract, and they didn't like have to work at the company anymore. And I thought maybe I could get that. So 6 months of holiday would be amazing. But in the end, I couldn't do that. A friend of mine who worked in corporate legal actually told me, just bang the drum and say you're leaving and going to a different, like to a competitor. But I couldn't do that. So I really liked the people. I didn't want to cause any problem to the people around me. So I stayed there for 6 months, but because I was like on part-time for the last 6 months, I had some holidays.
So you did manage to get part-time,
for 6 months during the termination period, I had part-time, but interesting enough, I couldn't do that. I didn't have the time to take a day per week off. And I put everything in the end and used that for moving and packing up my stuff. So it was a good thing actually to quit, because it wouldn't have been an institutional thing that I wouldn't be, I'm not there for one day per week, and nobody would have accepted that. I had to explain them to my boss, to my boss's boss, and up to the head of the unit actually, who was really like, he was the guy deciding if I'm a bad person or not, and if I should be like just pushed out of the company. But he like trusted me. I was the first person, strangely enough, not to like being released from the contract before that. Maybe it's a time of like him trusting me or them needing me. I don't know. But it was okay for me. It was like also I had the time to say goodbye. I wasn't like pushed out, just packing my stuff within an hour. So it was, for me, it was a good process actually.
It sounds like a good process to let go of something, like you said, right? You love the people, you liked your work, and to really transition through that. And so were there moments of doubt in that period or even after?
There were actually, it came from the outside, like, because I had to explain to my parents too, and they're really supportive of me, but they were afraid for me. They're always afraid for me if I don't know, I walk around in Heidelberg, which I was born in, and if I visit them and if I'm like coming from the train station at night to their house, which is like 10 minutes walk, they're like, take a cab and so on. So they're really always worrying about me, although I'm not 42. And then they were also worried for me if I find another job, and they were like, oh, why do you want to take like a year off? 6 months should be enough too. Mm-hmm. And then it's easier to find a job. And so I had to overcome their doubt, which was like also like planted in me, but my own doubt too. Will I ever find a job again? What will happen? Was that a bit bad decision? I wasn't sure. But I had a sense of inner trust that I survive. And I mean, I earned like lots or a decent amount of money at the company. I put away quite a lot. I invested in an apartment before, and I put like some money in the bank. So I had like an amount of money that I could rely on. So I wasn't just jumping in a black hole. And that was also very, very nice. But I actually, what I found out later too, was that I got a bonus for that year, and that really like supported my gap year, my sabbatical year too, but when it arrived like middle of the next year.
Oh, and that was a nice surprise. So that gave you trust. That's good.
Yeah, it was a good surprise, and very, very nice when it came then.
Well, it didn't like around the financial support, right? Our listeners, they're often interested in the financial support. So how did you do this financially, right? So you said you had a bit of savings to kind of move you into that new stage, let's say, right? And then I just imagine you got a bit of money, you say, okay, I'm going to Berlin. And then how did you sort yourself during the sabbatical? Did you have any plans, or did you just go, you know, chilling every day and go with the flow? How was that?
So my plan was to like have really like a sabbatical for 9 months and then start looking for a job again, and for 3 months. And then so it was actually like quite good, because it was a calendar year too. It started at New Year's, and at New Year's the next year I wanted to have another job in the business area. So it was like, time-wise, it was quite easy to distribute. My plan for that 9 months was to write music again, because I had written music before, and I had a composer's education when I was a kid. I tried to explore some musical stuff while I was working at that large company. And I got some really good feedback. So that pushed me to explore that further. I moved to Berlin too, because I already knew some people. I knew some actors, I knew some singers who were living here, and it was like a perfect playground to explore stuff, because everybody was already here that I could work with. I wanted to meet a lot of people here too. I thought about traveling, doing like a world trip, but I thought Berlin is kind of like a world trip. And in that year, I met so many Americans, Indians, French, but also people from Germany that I would maybe not have met otherwise, like people from the army, people working in hospitals and so on. So that was kind of like a world trip within Berlin. And I did that mostly by online dating. So it was good to be a singer, because I got to know so many people by online dating, and some actually really a lot, like some really, really good friends that I'm still friends with after 8 years. I met in the beginning of that year by online dating, funnily enough. But what I didn't consider, so that was my plan for the nine months. What I didn't know was how exhausted I had been, and how much sleep I needed. So I actually slept for almost 3 months,
Wow.
It was a like really cold winter, which was a perfect time too. But only after 3 months of like sleeping, of course, I ate and I met some people, but I didn't do that much. I noticed, wow, this is how it feels to be fully relaxed. This is how it feels not to have any headache anymore, not to have any backache anymore. This must be a state of relaxation. And that was really strange. Yeah. And my sensual antennas grew again. I also, via online dating, met a guy who's in coaching. And he was also at a corporate company before. And he told me that his antennas totally crumbled when he was there. And he was in India in between and then went back to the company. And he noticed how it hit him or hurt him and his antennas and his sensualities to come back to that company. And in a way, it felt the same. I had to unfold and let my antennas grow again and let my senses grow again. Because like in that corporate company, my personality is not that strong, I think. So it adapts to a lot of situations. It's a little bit like wax. And it adapts quite well, but when there is pressure, it's maybe not adapting in the right direction. So it was like that. I cut off, not intentionally, but not on purpose. I cut off my senses and my antennas to be able to work in that company and to be able to stand corporate meetings and so on and all this stress. And when that stress wasn't there anymore, my senses grew again. And that was quite interesting to notice, like smelling stuff, touching stuff. I didn't really like notice that before. Was that a question regard to the financial part or? So the financial part that Peggy asked for, I had some buffer. I actually put 10,000 euros aside and I thought I have to live from that, which is like to some people quite an amount of money. And I think I didn't really use that amount, but I had that buffer. I cut off so many expenses. I sold my furniture. I sold a lot of stuff. I sold my car. I moved to a flat of a friend of mine in Berlin, where I really paid a very low amount of money. So it was a small flat, not that renovated, but I loved it. Not my own furniture. It was already like pre-furnitured. And I cut my travel expenses. And I noticed, wow, I don't need that much money. Actually, the most money I needed was for health insurance. And apart from that, I didn't need that much money. And maybe because it was Berlin too, and some people in Berlin are used to not have that much money and not to spend that much money. There's some like free concerts, and you can like, you don't have to do expensive stuff. But I had to learn that again, because if you earn money, you also like spread the money and you spend that money on holidays, on stuff. By selling everything or most of it, and by really like cutting a lot of costs, I learned to live with really not that much money.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing that, because I think that's an important part that you can manage, and that's actually how I respond now, right? When people ask me, "Oh, how do you do it?" You know, and it's not, yeah, and supporting myself and my family, but I always say it's right. It's what comes in, but also what goes out, right? It's both directions. So, and then really noticing, well, what is it that I truly need, right? Need money for. And of course, Berlin like 7 years ago is different than now, but
sure.
I'm still really humbled that, you know, we have in Germany a lot of the essential things are really, you know, like free, right? I mean, like education, like even the healthcare system is relatively affordable. So you don't need that huge buffer to have a good life. Yeah.
That's so true. Also the arts, yes. There are some free concerts.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
By
pre-corona, right? Yeah.
And not online, but before, like at the University of the Arts in Berlin, they had some student concerts, and at the opera there were rather cheap tickets. And I went to so many galleries, actually, gallery openings, because they're for free usually too, and you get some wine. And it's a really nice atmosphere. And it's you shouldn't like just stumble in a situation unknowingly and just say, oh, I don't need any money. That's not true, but it makes sense to look at what you really need money for. And I talked to my brother too at that time. He has like wife and two kids, and he said, wow, I really envy you. You can do that, like sabbatical. I have all this like pressure, and so like I need to earn money so that everything works. And I told him, well, no, it's you want to sustain everything that you have with money, but you don't really need that much. So I think it is a choice. Of course, you need a basic amount of money, but it is a choice how much you want to have and how much money you want to spend on things.
Yeah. Well, and the system you live in, right? I mean, coming from the US and now in Australia and Germany, I mean, it depends on, and there are other countries where you have like some of the basic, right, in the pyramid, right? That's true. I mean, it's especially, and you always think it's the money mindset, right? It's really looking honestly and at your relationship to money and what it's withholding, right? I guess that's the essence of it. I mean, is it holding you back from making that transition? Then you should probably ask yourself, hey, you know, how can I transform this relationship? Because you mentioned, right, you didn't live your essence. And I loved how you shared that sensual also discovery again, because it's so true. When you're constantly in fight or flight, you lose, right? You're hyper-focused, you lose your senses. And I remember situations, right, where you like your body tells you this is not good, right? This is a hostile environment. And then you have a board, whatever meeting, and you think it's a life or death situation because that's what your body tells you. Whereas now looking back, I mean, you know, you think, well, where did the pressure come from, right? It's systemic, of course, but it's also... I mean, there are other real life or test situations. Yeah.
What I like about your story, Michael, is that I think it's really a brave transition. Yeah. Like you were in this like milk and honey land, and it's you who decided, hey, look, this is not going to work for me. Right. There wasn't a trigger that you got kicked out of the company or something, and then you had to rearrange yourself. So it seems like it was really intrinsically motivated. I mean, you said there was triggers you felt health-wise, but to actually then make the decision to say, look, this is not good and I'm gonna fight the system, right? Like you say, love it, change it or leave it. I think that's very, very brave actually what you did. Yeah? And I want to ask you though, because thanks for giving our listeners all these hints and tips and steps that you took. Talking about energy, I could feel when you were talking about the arranging your new life in Berlin at that time and working out, oh, maybe there's a free concert and I can do that. I could feel this change in energy. And I'm interested to hear who else or what else helped you to kind of, helped you to get into this new phase. Any tips for our listeners?
Yeah, good point. First thing, when I was invited to that podcast, Brave Transitions, I thought, wow, well, mine was not like a brave transition, but it's interesting to hear it from like another person, because to me it in retrospect it didn't seem that brave, because like what could I lose? And this is also something I learned from a friend of mine, always to ask yourself, what's the worst thing that could happen? And the worst thing could be that I would have like to live on welfare or live for a longer time on the money I had in my bank account. So that wasn't like, I wouldn't have completely lost that much actually. And I always had like the support of my family too. And so I wouldn't have because like to me it doesn't seem that brave, because I couldn't lose that much. Other people could maybe lose way more if they take a wrong decision. But yeah, it's interesting to hear it from the outside, how other people like say it. And to my parents and to some friends, it seemed brave at that moment too. And that's now coming to what you asked. I got support from my parents when I told them. They were like, I think they didn't understand, because they're from a different generation with different values. This is a generation that really like has to function and so on, and like stepping back and looking at one's life is totally not like in their focus. But they accepted it and they really supported it. And I really got some support from really good friends. Like that friend of mine who worked in corporate legal, she was very esoteric. And she was really like looking into herself, doing some like silent seminars and so on. And she was quite inspirational, I have to say, to look into myself. And there was a, like, how can I describe it? There was a sense of self-exploration and coaching in the air then. Another colleague from HR, I think Cindy, you know her, told me that she's going into systemic coaching and so on. So there was like a sense of this can't be everything in the air, and of self-exploration. And I really read a lot of books about life, sex, self-exploration and so on.
Online dating. About online dating, no.
no, about self-exploration. And I didn't have to read about online dating. So this was in the air actually, and this was supporting me, like friends and family. And then everything was just like then coming here and starting and like having a blank canvas. But Cindy, you said something like finding out like what the pressure was, and that there was a systemic pressure. Yes, I think there was systemic pressure, but the pressure came from me. And that was an interesting realization. I put all the pressure on me that I had to perform, that I had to go to my and do my job, although I was ill, that I had to earn a lot of money, that I had to like do this and that extra project to like have another career step. That was just pressure that came from me. Maybe it was inspired by people around me and by the flow in which all the people like drove, but it was, the pressure was just by myself, actually. And that was interesting to find out. I realized when I quit, actually, that I did all this pressure to me.
Yeah, and maybe that's the brave piece as well, right? Realizing that it's not someone else's fault or the system's fault.
No, not blaming anybody else.
Yeah, not blaming. Then stepping into your power again and making those choices that help you to move through and to where you are now and coming kind of to the end of our conversation, right? Because that's really beautiful, like, almost wrap up, right? Realizing, you can put the pressure on yourself, but you can also release it, right? If you do the work. So, so we're always curious, you know, fasting forward like a couple of years, what would you like to look back on?
Can I just briefly tell where am I now? Because that's quite of interesting, interesting too. Because I found exactly after a year, I found a job in online marketing, which was totally new to me. And funnily enough, I found that via an online date.
Your problems, online dating. That's so cool.
This is not the recipe for everything, and especially not because I've got a new boyfriend and so on. So this is not the recipe anymore. But then it was really like I met him for a date, and I told him I really want to do something else, and I want to go into online marketing. And he was like, "Well, I'm head of online marketing. We're looking for a paternal leave substitute, but it's not well paid." So I started at that company as as a paternal leave substitute for really like a low amount of money, but it gave me a good start and I knew I didn't need that much money. So I had like, I could choose from a wider area because I didn't need to earn the same amount of money. And it was good to have that gap here to get to know that and to make like the gap not that big. And then I I developed and now I'm a principal online marketing manager. And but I still, and I funnily enough, people told me later, my colleagues told me later when I sat in that interview, I told them I'm looking for a job that gives me a balance to explore things and to work in music. And I didn't remember that, but it's funny because now I would say, well, that was quite a kind of brave too to say that in a job interview, but that brought me that job. And it's true. In that job, I have the balance and the opportunity to explore things. Quite a lot of people have family there and want to see their family, enjoy their family. Quite a lot of people play musical instruments. So it's a really good position there to explore things.
There are companies out there that could give a bit of better balance. There are companies that give better balance, but you have to find them or they have to find you. So that sounds perfect. Yeah,
that's true. And you have to know what you're giving up for a better balance. You maybe don't earn that much money anymore, or you give up status or something like that. But it's important to know what you need and what you want. And coming back to your question, Cindy, what I would want to look back after 3 years, I want to, in these 3 years, I think I want to gain a little bit more leadership experience, because that would be another step for me now, having explored online marketing a lot and having had a small team. I would like to gain a bit more experience in leadership, because I found out that I really love helping people to thrive and coaching them and exploring what's in them and helping them to solve things. I really enjoy that, but I want to thrive myself. And I think by exploring that leadership, that would challenge me and my personality again in a really good way, so that I could learn something about myself too. And I want to, another thing is, I still want to create something that I'm really proud of, music wise, or I don't know, anything else. Maybe I love cooking now, so maybe publishing a book of recipes, vegan or vegetarian recipes, I don't know. But creation is a really big part now for me. I really didn't know when I was at that really big company what joy creation brings, cooking stuff, or I don't know. I'm now, my boyfriend has a garden and I have a vegetable pod there. And now I'm harvesting all the the herbs and the plants, and now I'm preparing them for winter to have them as spice and so on. This is, I mean, it's a very simple way of creating, but it's really joyful. And seeing plants that you planted grow, I didn't know that this can bring so much joy. And maybe also in the next 3 years, I want to jump in another direction again. Let's see. Because it's 7 years are over, so
The 7 year cycle, then we can interview again.
It's actually 8 or 9 years already, but maybe it's time to explore something totally new again. I've grown not body wise, but I've grown fat again, or there's some fat growing around me, having a flat and having everything and everything settled. Maybe it's time to get rid of some fat again. Metaphorical fat. Cool.
So maybe you can in future listen to your own episode and give yourself some advice. Yeah. How to do maybe potentially the next brave transition. Hey, I have a question, Michael, before you head off. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in online marketing and we always try to give our episodes a name that maybe even comes from the person who actually told us the episode. So if you were thinking, of a metaphor or a hashtag or some image that would come up about your story? Is there anything that you would come to your mind, how we could name it?
Oh, what, I don't know if it reflects that interview that much, but what's now in my mind is create more, consume less. That's a long hashtag, but that's something I'd really like to spread. And maybe my life is an example. You don't need to consume that much. You don't need that much money for consumption. And it really brings you joy to create and do something different.
Create more and consume less. I love it.
Yeah. It's Peggy inspired me.
You can skip the end. Well. Create more, consume less.
Yeah. Well, thank you so
awesome.
Much.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sharing your story
and the hashtag. It was really nice sharing, being able to share it.